What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Two Worlds Podcast. I'm Jake, and with me today is the Shrek to my Shadow the Hedgehog. It's Preston. What's up, buddy?
Hey, man. Did I miss a connection somewhere? I don't remember the crossover event from Sonic. Is that a comic book, Shrek?
Do not Google it. Do not Google Shrek and Shadow.
Don't Google anything Sonic in general, but yeah.
No, that one is like famously bad, and I just thought it would be funny.
Well, I'm okay with private browsing. I live on the edge, so I will Google that later in private. Private browsing, not just in private, not just
right,
like in my room. Or
right,
something.
Right, yeah.
Private browsing. Yeah.
Anyway, yes, yeah. Casey is out this week for some personal things, so I reached out to previous co-host Preston here to see if he was available, and thankfully he was. So
always
I didn't
ready.
Have the solo cast, which is
big old farming shoes to fill, but I'm gonna try to handle
all right. Well, before we get into the news, I did fish out some trivia cards. So
all right, batter's up. Let's see if the 3 or so years of me getting comics from you has gained me enough knowledge.
Alrighty, so I know we haven't done trivia in a few weeks, listeners, but I will ask Preston 6 questions. He will give a brief pause before he answers so that you can think of the answer yourself.
If I remember, yeah.
And here we go. What famous Marvel supervillain made his first appearance in 1977? In Iron Fist number 14.
All right, super villain from Iron Fist.
It's a bit of a trick question because this villain is not somebody you would associate with Iron Fist.
Was this like the first appearance of that, you said, of that villain?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, do you got multiple choice for me?
I don't actually.
Okay. All right. Well, let me. If it's not normally an Iron Fist, I just kind of go with anybody on this one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be start blanking on all of these. I'm thinking the Ten Rings guy.
The Mandarin.
Mandarin. Yes. The Mandarin.
It's not a good guess, but it is not. It is. It's actually Sabretooth, believe it or not.
Really?
Yep.
Showing up in Iron Fist. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty cool.
Mutants hanging out with fucking other people. All right.
I know.
It's wild. In the 70s.
Yeah, I know that it was a wild time for comics. All right, question 2. This one is multiple choice. Mark Scarlatti, a former Stark employee, went on to become the first incarnation of what Iron Man foe? We've got A, Firebrand, B, Whiplash, or C, Living Laser.
Well, I don't think it's Whiplash because his last name doesn't sound Eastern European enough. Firebrand?
No, it actually was Whiplash.
Really? I was going to say, like, I was thinking Whiplash, and like you said his name, I'm like,
yeah.
He doesn't sound too much like that for me. Well, 0-2, Ted. 0-2, you got the answers? You got the answers, pal?
So. Oh, he looks like he knows all.
He does. He's mad because I didn't let him eat puke earlier today, so that's fine.
All right. The heroine Echo suffers from what physical ailment?
She is deaf, right?
She is deaf.
Yes.
Yes.
I watched the show. I know what I'm talking about. I'm saying, like, shit, is it deaf or mute? Deaf. I can't remember now, guys.
Yeah. All right. What is the name of the canine looking member of the royal family of the Inhumans?
That would be Lockjaw.
It is Lockjaw. Nicely done.
He's a very good card in Marvel Snap, so everybody knows.
I remember you mentioning that. Yeah. I
play the Lockjaw deck here and there. Yeah.
He was meta there for a minute.
He is. You want to know what he does? You put him on the board. Yeah. You can only put 4 cards in that spot. So he takes up one of the slots. You put down 1 card. And what happens is that card, it can react to whatever it wants to do. And then it goes back into your deck and pulls another card from your deck. So it's really nice when you're playing down like a 1-2 Iceman. He does his Iceman thing, and then all of a sudden you get like, you know, a 620 Infinaut. It's very nice.
Nice. I like the strategy.
Yeah.
All right. Daredevil finds the Kingpin's presumed dead wife and returns her to the Kingpin. What is her first name?
Got multiple choice in this one?
I don't.
I've heard the name because I've read some Daredevil, especially when they did the whole where Elektra becomes Daredevil. And
did
I know
you watch
she,
the show?
I did watch the show, but Kingpin just says my wife. But I know he does say her name. I want to say Moira, but I think I just have X-Men on mind. It's not Moira, is it?
It's not.
Okay.
It's Vanessa.
Vanessa. Okay.
Yep.
Can hear him saying something in my head. Just can't figure out what it was.
I don't think you'll need the multiple choice on this, but it's there okay. If you decide.
Sure.
In what Marvel comic series did Blade first appear?
That would be the Tomb of Dracula.
It is the Tomb of Dracula. Hell, see, I knew you should know that one.
That one, yeah. Hell yeah. I love me some Blade. I was at a comic shop and I was returning all the comics essentially that you didn't want from me. So I'm like, hey, just want to put these in. If you can want to take them store credit, I'm like, cool. If not, I'll take them back. But it'd be cool if you could. He's like, okay, if it gives me credit. And I see on his shelf, he has like the first like issue of Blade. Mm. I'm like, cool. I'm like, he's like, yeah, I got actually the first appearance too. It's upstairs. So if you want to take a look, I'm like, I mean, I know what it looks like. I mean, it'd be kind of cool to see it, but like, I don't really care that much to see it. I'm like, just kind of curious how much, you know, is it going for? He's like 2,500 or something like that. I'm like, yeah, I'm good. I don't have that many comics to trade in and I'm not spending that much money on comic books, especially right now.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. I remember. So like every comic was selling at record numbers during COVID, but that one in particular was like 10 grand.
Jesus.
I know. Absolutely insane.
It's a big name, big Marvel name.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, really, I'm not saying that there are less of that issue out there than others, but like, I don't know. The 70s Marvel horror stuff was great and a lot of people read it, but it's definitely wouldn't have been more than, you know, one of the mainstream, like, you know, like superhero titles.
And how many of those people are kicking themselves in the ass being like, yeah, I read that horror one. I just kind of tossed it out when I was done with it.
Dude, I know.
Some 3-year old and he chewed on it and got gum on it or some shit.
I had one of my customers say that, that he was collecting it as that came out in the 70s, yeah. And he stopped after issue 9.
Oh man.
And I'm pretty sure 10 is when Blade first appears, but it's like, man, you chose the wrong time to stop.
Yeah, my dad was born in 1940, but when he was like, I don't know if it was like during the Vietnam War, but he remembers owning and reading a bunch of Superman adventure comics, and mm-hmm. he's like, man, it's just one of those things you look back and I'm like, damn, if I just kept those or like his baseball cards or anything. He's like, any of your stuff? He's like, we have it in a bag back there. He's like, we're not getting rid of it. And he's like, just in case. It's like, we don't want to get rid of your stuff.
Yeah. I mean, how are you to know, right? And I understand that, you know, collecting always takes up space and whatnot, but
hoarding, collecting,
you know, I don't know. You can tell I'd have a problem with comics and video games. And then there's in that room is novels. And, you know, I just like stuff. I am a little hoarder.
As long as you got shelf space for it, it's fine. Yeah. As long as you don't have like those totes behind you and they're all piled up everywhere in your house.
Right.
And you just happen to have a collectibles.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. All right, moving along to the news. Casey had one little piece in there that we'll touch on before I go through my stuff.
Sure.
I don't know if you saw this
for you if you don't already cover it.
Okay, cool. So the X-Men 97 showrunner, Bo DeMaio, he got kicked off the show before the series even drops.
Mm-hmm.
Now, allegedly, they say that he was a nightmare to work with, but the Disney executives also said that his behavior on OnlyFans was creepy. So they didn't like that he had an OnlyFans.
He has an OnlyFans.
Yeah.
That is. Okay.
Right. which whatever, get your bag, dude, whatever you want to do.
Sure.
But I don't know. Maybe there was questionable behavior on there, but
I mean, it's Disney. If they're like, we don't like what you do, we're going to kick you out.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's for good. Sometimes it's like, did you really need to? Did you?
I mean, yeah, it's tough. Like, does it suck for him? Yeah. But at the same time, it's like, look who you're working for. They need to have a certain, you know, I don't know, stipulations, I guess. Yes, yeah. Something like that. So like that,
yeah,
it is what it is. Yeah, go ahead and do your bit of news, man. Even if I have it, it's whatever.
I mean, you, I shared it to our text group, but so you know about it. The Acolyte is a show coming out to Disney Plus. It is a Star Wars show that is going to be the first ever live action version of the High Republic era, which is the whole reason why I got back into comics, because they started doing High Republic comics. But yeah, they're going to be showing off a trailer. For those of you listening to the podcast on the day of release, it'll be happening that day. But yeah, essentially 3/19, they're going to put out the trailer. They put out a poster today, which looks sick. Just has like the lightsaber with like blood going out instead of like a lightsaber, like a red beam. And that has a release date of June 4th. So I'll be on Disney Plus on June 4th. I'm super stoked. I've been reading a lot of High Republic, and there's no Sith in there right now. So I have a feeling that this is going to be how the Sith come into play in that era of the Jedi or that Star Wars universe. So I'm super stoked for it. I'm excited. The director or the creator is, she made, I looked it up just before I got here, but I forgot about it. She made, I think it was like Russian Doll or something like that. It's like a very popular show recently. And so that's a few, it's the most popular work, but yeah, I'm very curious to see how it is. Looks fairly mature if they're going to put blood in the poster. So I'm excited.
I am too. I just, you know, I've loved the last few live action Star Wars shows. So,
Andor, you know, Ahsoka.
Yeah.
Home runs, man.
I even liked Obi-Wan. I know some people had problems with it.
I liked it. I could see why people had problems with it, but you're like just reaching out to my childhood and just going for all the nostalgia. So I'm like, hey, you put Hayden in there and it's really good to see Hayden again. I really like to see him in Ahsoka too. It's like, man, dude's finally getting his just due after all those years of people hating on him and just drag him into the dirt. It's like, hey, no, the kids who liked it, we're older now and we love you. Please come back.
Yeah. No, he was amazing in Ahsoka. I really liked him in that.
Yeah. Perfect.
I'm excited for that. I think that, I think it'll surprise people. I've had some people at the shop that were just like, yeah, well, I don't really know like what it's about. So I don't know if I care. And it's like, yeah, well, give it a shot, man.
Yeah.
I did have a question for you though.
Yeah.
If you know the answer, I thought it was kind of weird that it's June 4th and not May 4th. Like, Bad Batch is out right now. Is Bad Batch going to like lead up to that, or is Bad Batch going to be over before that comes out?
Are you talking about June 4th, the Acolyte show?
Mm-hmm.
So I think I totally missed out on the release of Bad Batch. I love Bad Batch, but I have not seen any trailers or anything for if there's a new season. If there's a new season, that's all news to me. And
oh, it's like happening tonight. Right now.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah.
I totally missed out on that. I love Bad Batch. It's great.
I think it's been out for like maybe 3 weeks. So you're not too far behind.
It's not going to last up until June. I don't think so. I think if I had a guess, I mean, it's been a long time since I watched last season, but I would say they usually give that show, I think, 10 episodes.
Okay.
So that's about 2 months, April, May. It's pretty much leading right up to that. So yeah, it could be. If they do like a 12 episoder, if it's the last season, maybe two, I think it might be.
Right. I just thought it was weird.
Omega with her very thick New Zealand accent.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's good. I like it. I'm excited to see it. And I'm glad that we're getting that stagger of, I'm not going to drop everything all at once. I'm not going to separate it too much. It's like, oh, we get Bad Batch and then you get Star Wars right at the book end of that. So that's
good for
us.
It is
good. We're feasting.
We are. I hope that there's something Star Wars related that whether it's one show or the other on May 4th.
Yeah, no, they'll have something. If not, like, I think one time they even did like a behind the scenes or like a documentary type style thing. They'll kind of drop during that time. They'll drop something.
Right. Yeah. It's happened before, but May 4th is also Free Comic Book Day.
Yes. I'm hoping to be down to come hang out with you guys on Free Comic Book Day.
Nice. That'll be exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a stacked weekend for nerds. That's for sure.
Hell yeah.
All right. Moving right along. We did, speaking of trailers, I think 3 or 4 days ago, a trailer dropped for the new Crow movie. Did you check
that? I watched it. Yeah. I did.
What'd you think?
Looks promising. I really like the actor. I know he can take it seriously and hopefully not take it too seriously. As we saw the last time, was it Bruce Lee's son? I think was the original actor on Crow.
Brandon.
Yeah. Brandon Lee. And, I'm sure it wasn't just, it definitely wasn't just the movie that caused him to commit suicide, but, that's one of those kind of things to where it's like, has that like Joker kind of weird connotation to it, to where, you know, if you go play Joker, you're probably gonna get a call from Jackie boy going, "Hey man, just so you know, it's this role can really take it out of you. So please be careful," kind of deal.
Right.
It looks cool. It looks great. I'm super stoked for it. It's got the tone. It doesn't look too Hollywood-y. Doesn't look too cheesy. I was kind of worried that they would go a little too much to the cheese for it, but as long as they take it serious and make it mature, I like it.
I mean, I got nothing but seriousness from that trailer.
Yeah, exactly.
I know I've seen the old Crow movie. Mm-hmm. So my friend and my business partner at the shop, Mike, he is a huge fan of the Crow. He's the biggest Crow fan I know. He loves that movie. He liked the comics. So I hope that this is good, like, for him. I really want, like, you don't want any of your...
You would have reached out to him and been like, hey, did you like it? Did you see it?
Oh, I know. I should have. I should have asked him before now. But I just hope that that it's everything that he wants out of it. You know, just like anytime something Star Wars comes out, I'm like, I hope it's good. I know Preston's looking forward to it, or, you know, Godzilla with Casey. So yeah. It's just one of those things. But I thought it looked pretty cool. I know that guy is a good actor. You know, I've not watched it or some of the other things that he's been in, but still looks pretty cool. I'll definitely check it out.
I'm pretty sure he, did you not watch I'm not a horror fan, but, did you watch the new It
movies? No.
Wasn't he the clown? I think he's the clown.
He was the clown, but
Pennywise.
I don't do horror movies. Stick to like books and comics for that stuff.
But, yes, anyway. I can tell a comic. It's not going to jump at me.
Yeah, exactly. So, all right. More movie and show stuff. There is a Nova project in the works at Disney. Fans have said this before, but it's coming back around. The fans want Ryan Gosling to play Richard Rider. I love Ryan Gosling. I think that he would be wasted on an MCU movie personally. I know everyone just did. Yeah, everyone wants to check. And I know we just did Barbie, but I feel like Barbie was one of those like lightning in a bottle movies. And
sure.
I just don't know that he needs to do Nova, but we'll see what happens. Disney also went on to say that they are developing more than they plan to produce. So just because they say they're developing this, it doesn't mean that it's going to happen, which here's the thing about that, though. That is very vague. They could just be like, okay, we want this director, writer, director to do this movie, pitches something, same for this, 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 and this, and then we'll just see what sounds good and if we want to make it happen. So, like, I think that's a fine approach. It just, I wish that they would do it behind the scenes and not like, hey, everybody, we're developing these 10 things, but we're probably really just going to, you know, produce 3 or 4 of them.
Just getting people's hopes up at that point, and you're just going to get upset by it.
Yeah, exactly. Casey is a huge Nova fan. That's one of his favorite Marvel characters. So I know that he doesn't want that to come to fruition. Cause I know he doesn't trust that they'll do it right. And
of course, yeah,
you know, at this point I'm mostly inclined to agree with him, but we'll see if it happens.
Sure.
All right. And then the last bit of movie news before a couple of actual comic book news things. Hollywood Reporter says that a live action Teen Titans movie is in development. Hollywood Reporter doesn't usually put out something unless there's, you know, something to it.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I don't love that personally because I love Dick Grayson. He's my favorite DC character.
You're all about the beefcake. Yeah.
I am. I want them to like just properly introduce him. And that's assuming that they would use him for this. I don't know why they wouldn't. But
he's a pretty staple Titan. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I guess they could go with a different Robin, but it's like, why would you? So I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that. I was thinking maybe they'll do like Lazarus Contract, in which case maybe they could bring Joe Manganiello, however you say his last name. He played Deathstroke at in that
sure
after credit scene of whatever mm-hmm. movie. And I like Joe. I know Casey's a big fan of Joe. Dude's a big nerd. It'd be mm-hmm. cool to have him do it. But as we talked about last week, he said that he talked to James Gunn and there was pretty much like, yeah, we need to let that dream die. So
yeah.
Who knows? Who's to say they won't do Lazarus Contract at some point? Because that's arguably the biggest Teen Titans story out there.
Okay.
But we'll just see. And I don't know if you know much about Lazarus Contract or anything like that.
I don't know anything about it.
They did it in the Amazing Teen Titans cartoon. That's when Deathstroke had Terra infiltrate the Titans and then she ended up betraying them. It's a really good story. Like I think the Teen Titans cartoon did it well, but obviously the comic book is different and also amazing in its own way, so we'll see. Who's to say they're even going to touch it at all? I'm just guessing here.
But. No, I the only thing I know about Titans is that I watched the HBO show a handful of times.
I like that show. I
don't think I finished it, but I definitely watched a handful of it. I liked it a lot. I definitely thought the guy they played, Dick Grayson, was perfect. I think he's phenomenal as that character.
He was, as was the guy that played Jason. He was
just that little
the kid. Best. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Love to hate him kind of deal. Yeah, they did perfect.
Yeah, exactly. So, all righty. Now on to the comics news.
Mm-hmm.
So Al Ewing will be writing his first DC Comics story in this year's Pride issue. And it's all about Michael, the Blue Star Man. I mean, if you're not familiar with Starman, or like, I'm trying to think what else he's been in, like Cry for Justice, then, you know, that isn't going to really mean too much to you, but Michael is gay. So I think it's pretty neat that they're showcasing, gosh, I would say even like a C-list character in that issue. So we'll see how Al handles it. You know, the Pride issue is always an anthology book, so it's just going to be a short story either way. But still, I wonder if that means that Al is going to do more at DC, because right now I would say he is one of Marvel's biggest writers. So I think that's a pretty interesting move. I wonder if he's doing this to maybe force Marvel to give him a better contract or something, or maybe there's nothing to it. Yeah. Yeah. Who knows? Maybe there's nothing to it and he's just doing it for fun. So
do you remember what else he wrote? This sounds really familiar. I know I'm thinking of Steve Ewing, but.
Oh yeah, he did Immortal Hulk. He did not the current, but the one before this, Guardians of the Galaxy. He is currently doing Immortal Thor.
First couple issues.
He's done some X-Men stuff. You'd know him from that's the X-Men probably, stuff. That's okay. I think he did X-Men Red.
Okay. Yep, I read that.
I think so.
Yep. All based on Mars, wherever they're at.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not familiar with a lot of his work, but I am reading Immortal Thor every month and really enjoying it. So, you know, we'll see how it goes.
Okay.
All right. And then finally, Marvel announced all of their X-Men titles.
Saw that up
after the Krakoan era comes to an end. They announced it at South by Southwest, which I thought was an interesting place to announce all of this, but
could have waited a month and done C2E2.
Yeah, I know, right? So yeah, I'm going to say all of those titles, and mm-hmm. we know the creative teams for some of them, but not all of them.
Sure.
So the three core X-Men titles, we've got Uncanny X-Men mm-hmm. by Gail Simone and David Marquez.
I like Simone.
Yes. And then we've got X-Men by Jed McKay, who I'm a huge fan of.
There we go. And, glad to have him on it.
And Ryan Stegman, who is a very good artist.
I do like Stegman as well.
And then we've got The Exceptional X-Men. And that is written by Eve Ewing, no relation to Al.
Sure.
And art by Carmen Carnero.
Okay.
So, I don't
Carmen
know.
Carmen sounds familiar. I think Carmen, did they do Swamp Thing? I can't remember.
Maybe?
I had to look it up.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I know that I've heard the name as well.
That has a phenomenal, like, mainline X-Men, like, team.
Yeah, yeah, I completely agree. Did you see the logos that they went with?
No, I did not.
Okay, I'll pull it up here just for a hot sec. You can see that they're going with the classic
90s-ish, yeah.
90s X-Men. So
show the teams. Who's in the teams?
This is all that they have shown so far. Don't know which book this
so that's
falls
definitely
under.
Straight that's probably gonna be X-Men.
Yeah, I mean, you can see a leg right here, you can see an arm over here, so this could maybe be Gambit.
It's like a pole, yeah,
and it looks like a knee pad there, so maybe
Psylocke, Cyclops, Beast, Magic,
Quentin Quire.
That's Resurrected Magneto.
I have no idea who this is.
Yeah, that look. I don't recognize the hair at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
So.
Okay.
Anyway, pretty interesting. And then we got six other titles that were announced shortly after that.
Of course. Jesus. X-Men.
So we've got Phoenix, X-Factor, Storm, Nyx, or NYX, however it's pronounced,
mm-hmm.
X-Force. And Wolverine. So X-Force and Wolverine, not really a surprise there. X-Factor, it's like, okay, it's been long enough. We could do another X-Factor book. With Storm, Phoenix, and Nyx, I can't imagine that those are going to be more than a 5-issue series each. But no, at the same time, who knows, right? So.
Yeah, I have a feeling it'll go the same long lines of like what they did, like, the ones we're going to talk about, like Dead X-Men, stuff like that, to where it's like, it's going to be a part of like the main story, but like branching off because there's so many X-Men, we have to go off separate books.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'll probably get the main three and then maybe go for X-Force.
Probably yeah, kind of depends on the team, I think, for exactly. At least for myself. I hope that Magic is on Jed's book. Because
it looks like the mainline one, they're gonna have Cyclops is gonna be in the mainline. it's very rare that he's not like a big part of the mainline X-Men.
Yeah. I found pictures for those other teams. So let me pull the share screen back up here.
Some of the new characters I don't have the exact names for. Okay, so you do see the side. So that is Gambit Staff.
So we got Gambit, Wolverine, Jubilee, Rogue.
Yeah.
Jubilee and Nightcrawler, which great classic team there.
Hell yeah.
So looks like that'll be Gail's team, and then Exceptional. We've got Emma Frost,
mm-hmm.
Kitty,
hell yeah.
And I don't know the other three.
All right. Well, Exceptional hop high at the gig. I follow Kitty wherever she goes.
Right. Oh.
She's still in a Shadow Cat suit too, so that's cool.
Bronze, Axo, and Melee. I mean, they look cool, so you know, we'll We'll see what happens there. But either way, okay. Big news, especially for all the X people who have been like, what the heck is going to happen after all the Krakoan stuff?
Yeah.
So we'll see. Hopefully we get creative teams for those six other series soon. Because I desperately want to know who's writing some of those. And also, I have to imagine that Nyx is going to be an X-23 book like it was originally. But who knows? So we'll see.
Find out.
All right. But that is it for the news. So, Preston, what new releases did you check out this week?
I got Dead X-Men number 3. Fall of the House of X number 3, Batman and Robin number 7, Mace Windu number 2, Green Lantern number 9, Mighty Morphin Power Rangers the Return number 2, and Wesley Dodd's Sandman number 6, the finale.
Excellent. We'll definitely end on Sandman because it's a finale.
Yeah.
Sure. But yeah, I also read Wesley Dodd's Sandman 6, Green Lantern 9. Batman and Robin 7, Immortal Thor number 8, Thundercats number 2, and The One Hand number 2. So you got a couple more than me, Preston. I'll let you do two of them, and then I'll
two
do
of them?
Mine. Yep.
Okay. Let's go ahead and just grab the X-Men boys then. All right. Start up. We have Dead X-Men number 3. That one was written by Steve Fox. Art by Bernard Chang. This one is going to be some time looping bullshit. So just, I'm not going to go super depth into the story because it's a lot. But essentially, I mean, I told you the story, but the whole Krakoan craziness and the whole thing with Hellfire Gala, where Nimrod came in and destroyed all the brand new X-Men as soon as they were announced, it was like, yeah, we got Jubilee, Cannonball. And they're all like doing like the full pose. Next page was like Nimrod coming in and just destroying all of them. So this is the Dead X-Men. I'm pretty sure it was Hope Summers. It wasn't Hope Summers. It was one of Jean and Cyclops kids, so it might be Hope. But she essentially went through another time/dimension/multiverse thing to where she gathered up all those Dead X-Men so that way Orcus wouldn't notice, and they're gonna go after Moira, who is now also doing her own time and multiverse jumping. So they're going to try to stop her because Professor Xavier is trying to right the ship for all the mutants, essentially, after all that stuff happened. So he's in his own little pocket dimension called, like, I think it's called like Space X or something like that, something silly. But they're essentially trying to stop Moira from stopping him, because Moira, this version of Moira, or life of Moira, has an axe that's made out of pieces of like Omega Red, Wolverine, and like three other different mutants that like cuts black holes and lets her go through multiverses.
It sounds like a very OP weapon.
Yes, it is. Very, very. So we'll see what happens with that. I think it's got one more issue. The same with my next one, but it was fine. Dead X-Men wasn't the greatest one that I have as far as the X-Men comic books I'm following. It's definitely low on that list. I gave it a 2 out of 5. I really just do it for Jubilee. But it's not great. They're chasing Moira around. They're going through different lives. They ended up like jumping into one to where she was like the wife of Apocalypse, and they just jump it through time and are right in front of them. And Apocalypse is like, who the hell are you? I'm about to fire my guards and kill them. He's like summons and calls them, I think the Horde or something like that. And it was just a bunch of like zombie looking, the versions of Angel. I think it's like Archangel or Dark Angel or something like that. And they jet out of there. They go to a different one and they find out that this era of Moira is not a part of the timeline that has this weird factor of Dominion, and they're looking for the Dominion to stop whatever they're trying to do. It's a lot. It's a lot to take in. It's not great. I gave it a 2 out of 5.
Right on. It's a shame because the idea sounds cool. It's a shame that it wasn't delivered a little better.
Yeah. Unfortunately, that's kind of how the way it goes with some of the spinoff X-Men stuff, which is why I try not to deviate too much off of the main. Mm-hmm. If it's a character that I like, I'll probably jump off and kind of check it out. The Way of X with Nightcrawler was fantastic when he's starting his own little, like, he detached from God and wanted to start his own religion for mutants. And like the other one that I loved was Marauders. And that was where, you know, Captain Catherine Pride, with her super sweet captain uniform on, That was, I love that one. That one was fantastic. I love that series. But most of them don't go that way. X-Men, yeah. Those that red, green, blue, those that came out weren't great. Rogue and Gambit was just all right that I read, but it's unfortunately the side ones are not the greatest. Which also brings me to my second one. Fall of the House of X, number 3. That's written by Jerry Dugan, art by Jethro Morales. This one, and I'll kind of read my notes here to kind of remind myself. Emma Frost leads multiple teams of mutants to continue to destroy and overtake Orcus. Cyclops is led to a base by a top Orcus scientist who helped him escape Orcus because he was literally just about to get beheaded by Omega Sentinel. And then this scientist comes up and just like has like a small little EMP. He's like, she's like, that's the only one time use. Like, we got to get out of here before she wakes up. He's like, why are you saving me? I can't see, because he doesn't have he has the goggle on, but doesn't have the red stuff on there. Mm-hmm. But forget what type of material that is. But she essentially takes him. She's like, oh, I need to take you somewhere real quick. And Magic's like, okay, I'll drop you guys off. He's like, you sure you're okay, Cyclops? He's like, yeah, I'm cool. I'm like, all right. Magic leaves. And then Nimrod's there. And he's like, you know who this is? Like, this is not your husband. Because apparently the scientist, her husband, is the one that became Nimrod. He's like, yeah, I know it's not him, but he can calculate it enough to understand. And he's like, you're right, I can. And I'm going to give you your gift a little early, and just straight up snaps her neck in half.
Brutal.
Like, oh, okay. All right. And then flashes to the other size, to where Emma Frost is doing like this super crazy kind of mind meld with all the mutants. Like, hey, I got task force here, task force here, task force here. We're going to destroy all of Orcus, or as much as we can as possible. So they're going and destroying different people. She and someone else catch up with Dr. Stasis, and essentially she's like, I'm gonna give you your worst nightmare, the thing that you think mutants are gonna do to people, is like, I'm gonna make you live that like over and over again. And she's doing that, and he's like having a heart attack, and then I think it was like Hope comes in and just burns him to ash. So they're hoping he doesn't come back, but as we all know with the Sinisters, they will come back sooner or later.
Yeah.
He got his, which is nice, because I don't know if you guys know the Sinisters, but they're little shits. They like to cause a ruckus, and they're always pretty bad. So very end of that was kind of the big reveal of what's going to be, I think, a big part of the next arc. So Nimrod and the other Sentinels were kind of doing some things in the background. They're using Orcus to kind of get the humans and mutants to fight each other. And really in the background, what Nimrod was doing, and he reveals the very end, is he was building Sentinel City. So we don't know what that entails yet, but at the very end, it shows like a little orb coming up from the ground. Not little, it's a very big orb, Sentinel City. And that's what he's been building this entire time. So that's, I think, going to be what's going to entail probably with the next X-Men series, I think.
Yeah.
But this one was pretty good. I liked all the whole Emma Frost battling and stuff like that. And it's nice to see the Sentinel City at the very end. I actually get that one a 4 out of 5. Most of the Fall of House X, I would not rate that like that. But yeah. The ending with Emma and her whole teams was fantastic, I thought.
Nice. Good deal. All right. First one for me is The One Hand, number 2. It is written by Ram B, with art by Lawrence Campbell. And, you know, I won't dwell on this too long, because it's like you're either reading this, you know, Image miniseries or you're not. But essentially, it's a continuation of the last issue, where this detective is trying to figure out if these murders are copycat or if he just did not catch the right person the first time, and it leads him all over the place. But man, art's really good. I really dig the story. And its partner book comes out, I think, next week, which is called The Six Fingers. But anyway, it's really good. If you like kind of a neo-noir crime book, then this is definitely the one that you need to be checking out. And I... Casey and I usually rate books out of 10, but I like that you're doing 5s. That's a fun little like guest thing. So I'm going to rate it a 4 out of 5.
Okay. I don't know why I thought you guys did out of 5. I think because I do that with games on our show. I think I just totally forgot.
It doesn't matter. It's all just points if you made want. Up numbers, right? Yeah. So There you go. Give
it 4.5 is still a 10-point scale.
Yeah, exactly. All right, I'll. I think I've got. How many more do you have before Amici's?
I have two before Amici's.
Okay, same. So just you go next, and we'll alternate.
I have Mace Windu number two. First one wasn't really doing a whole lot for me. I don't think this comic book does a whole lot of justice. And with Mace Windu, he's supposed to be like the best combat dude in the Jedi Order. So you would think you'd get a little better combat. But I got a nice variant. This one is by Karen Darbo. It's the Woman History Month variant.
Mm.
Very cool, very stylized. I meant to look it up. I have no idea who that is in the cup. But she's not in the book, which I've noticed a lot of these Star Wars Women History Month ones. I'm not sure they do it the same with Marvel, but like, I think like with one of the High Republic ones, we're getting like Ahsoka on the cover. I'm like, yeah, can you just do like one of the females in that book? Like, do you have to do Ahsoka? Like, all right, okay. All right.
Ahsoka makes money.
And she does. It's a really cool cover though. I'm not going to lie. This is a really cool cover. This one was written by Mark Bernardin, pencils by George S. Jorge, maybe, Jaunty. And inker was Dexter Vines, and colorist was Andrew Dollhouse. I meant to put all those in there because I really wanted to shout out the colorist, Andrew Dollhouse. There is a section in here where they go into this cave, and I'll explain how stupid it is here in a second, but it looks very cool. It's like, it's supposed to be like this cave with lava going under the water, but it's blue lava. So nice. It looks very nice. Looks very cool. They're like, why is it blue? I'm like, oh, because it's so hot, you know, and like blue is like the hottest color when it comes to fire. And it's like, she's like skipping over stones, like going through this river of lava. I'm like, I know what happens to people when they get too close to normal lava. If you got blue, the hottest lava out there, pretty sure you'd be melted by now, especially right. In a cave. But Star Wars, we're just going to go ahead and let it go. There's cave worms in this one. But yeah, no, this one had them. They're essentially, he's on this other planet with this other person. Azita Cruz, she's a smuggler, so they're kind of they have a nice little back and forth with each other. They're in there to get essentially the formula for Coaxium Ultra. Any of you who watched the Solo series, you should know what Coaxium is. It's the thing that they use to get hyperspace and all that kind of stuff going to hyperspace fuel, essentially. And this is the Ultra formula, so they're going to look for that. There's a weird cult that's just like very anime-esque in the background while they're talking, standing like on a cliff in this cave, being like, oh, it's them. Yes, we should get them. We should get them now because we're the purists. You know, we don't taint ourselves with other knowledge because we're pure. Right. And that she mentioned something about, I know where the formula is. Like, oh, well, we won't kill her just yet. We'll still follow her. I'm like, Jesus Christ, guys. So they're, you know, conservative cultists are looking in the background, and they cut to Jabba's palace. And this guy with a very long, like Fu Manchu, is talking to somebody about, yeah, we want to get you to take down the smuggler and find Mace Windu. They're trying to go after this formula, so we need to hire somebody to take care of it for us. And it's a Anzellan, a bounty hunter. Anzellan, if you don't know, that is a species of Babu Frick. So it's a super teeny tiny bounty hunter. I'm super stoked because they show him right at the very end, and he looks like him. I'm wondering what kind of crazy shit, like he has to have like a mech or something that he's inside of to like fight people and do his bounty hunting with. So
yeah,
it's very cool. Very cool species to kind of put in there as a bounty hunter. Like I said, the first issue wasn't great. Second issue is a little bit better. I gave it a 3 out of 5.
Okay. But it's getting better at least.
Yeah. That's what I like thought too. I'm like, okay, they give you a little bit of action. The action was all right. Mace Windu was fighting some, what we call them, boar worms. They're essentially Gravoids, if anyone has seen Tremors. They're exactly that. So they come out, they start fighting him, and he's like, I can't hit them because they're, you know, their armor's too hard. And like, well, they live in the lava, you know, they got hardened pretty well. So he just starts putting them to sleep. He's like, oh, I got this one. She distracts the other one, he gets that one, and that's how they get it.
I wondered because the A cover
got one of those boar worms.
Yeah, it's him, you know, on top of one of the worms with his lightsaber out. And I'm like, oh, that's a pretty dope cover. So I'm glad that, because, you know, sometimes with comics, what's on the cover has nothing to do with the interior. So it's nice that this was actually what it was.
Sure.
All right. Next up for me, I've got Thundercats number 2. It's written by Declan Shalvey with art by Drew Moss. I'm getting all the variants because I'm a Thundercats freak.
Oh.
But I'll just show the very cool A cover by David Nakayama. Very, very cool. Yeah. So I think
DNA.
I do too. I do too. I love how menacing he makes Mum-Ra look. Because I think Mum-Ra is like the coolest 80s cartoon villain.
Oh yeah.
The issue was cool. So the Thundercats find another Thundarian that they've never seen before on the mutant ship that they fought last time. And so Chitara rushes the Thundarian back to their ship so that they could give her some first aid and whatnot. And she wakes up, tells them her story. Last thing she remembers was being on her farm with her family. And then a mutant ship showed up and took her away. So they have to tell her, oh, Thundaria was blown up and your family's dead. So very sorry about that. But one of them, I think it's Panthro, is very suspicious of her, but doesn't really say too much about it. And then spoiler alert, we find out at the end, like Lion-O is kind of hugging her because she's very upset learning about her family sure. being dead. And then you see her eyes glow red. And in the background is Mum-Ra with eyes glowing red. So it's like, oh, Mum-Ra is controlling this girl. So that's pretty interesting. And I love this book, man. It's, good. You know, it's definitely, if you're a Thundercats fan, it's made for you. And I love that they're doing this book. So I'm going to give it a 4.5 out of 5. It was damn near perfect.
Nice. All right. Last from a solo, this one, I love this one. I love the cover I got for it. This is My Morphin Power Rangers, The Return #2, co-written, by Amy Jo Johnson. A lot of you know her as the original Power Ranger, from the American version. Pink Ranger, and then also co-written with Matt Hodson, and an art by Nico Leon. I have the Zekure, Ejikure. Is that his
name? Oh yeah, yeah. Say it.
Yeah, sure.
Very, very good.
Very good. But yeah, he did this one where it's like just her. We get like a little bit of a reflection of Rita and the Green Ranger. I'm liking this book a lot. First one was off a little bit of a slow start. Second one is much better. This one, so we see the final battle against like the Rangers and Rita. Apparently Rita and them, they destroyed the whole base. They destroyed Zordon and Alpha, and they're doing their last like pull to be like, we have to take care of them now. It's like, this is the last chance we got. So essentially what happens is everybody but Kim and Tommy are in their Zords on the moon, fighting off like just this giant army of all of Rita's monsters. And so they're having at it while secretly Tommy and Kimberly have gone into Rita's palace, and they have this bomb, which is supposed to like disperse like the Power Ranger energy, whatever they're using their morphers, which is supposed to be like pure energy, like positive energy. So if they release it in a spot that has, you know, super dark energy, it will go ahead and negate that. And essentially it's supposed to like knock them all unconscious.
The power of friendship.
The power of friendship will prevail against darkness, yes. So they get there. They find like one of the laboratories or whatever. And while outside is fighting, Rita's like, yo, one of my minions, he's got to see us. He's got to check this out. It's like, I'm going to go get him real quick. Of course, what happens? Rita stumbles onto them trying to set the bomb. And so, of course, they're fighting Rita. And as they're fighting them, they hit the bomb essentially, and it knocks the damages the remote, and you can kind of see it cracked a little bit. So he's like, I gotta stay behind here. So they're fighting Rita, and as they're fighting Rita, Rita's like, this is it, I'm ending you now. And she goes to kill Tommy, and right behind her, Kimberly just puts an arrow right in the chest of Rita, and she's just dead. She's gone. Done.
Damn.
And she's like, I had to do it. He's like, Tommy's like, yep, you had to do it. There's no other answer to it. It's like, this sucks. We don't kill people, but you did what's right. It's like, unfortunately, bomb's all jacked up. So we don't have a little remote thing anymore to ignite it. I have to use the failsafe, which gives like 10 seconds. He's like, that's plenty of time for us to leave here. He's like, yeah, but it's a broken bomb. We're not going to both stand here and then go. I'm like, you go. I'll hit the button just in case anything happens. We both agreed that if anything happens bad, like I would be the one to stay behind. So I'm staying behind. Hits the button and it explodes immediately. So everyone else is gone. Everyone else is off the moon, explodes immediately and kills all the enemies. It doesn't knock them unconscious because it was messed up. It dispersed too much energy and killed all the evil people. So that kind of explains why Kimberly no longer is a ranger, doesn't care about it. First issue touched on a little bit to where like, I forget the name of him, but the Black Ranger essentially became very famous Zach? Because he... Yes, Zach. And yeah, because Zach and Billy. Zach became very famous because he used that to his advantage. Like, hey, I was one of the Rangers. You know, I got this like autobiography book, whatever. And then you have Billy. He's doing his own thing. And then, of course, Trini dies at some point. I guess I don't know. I forget how she died. But in this book, it was like I think due to like age or something like that or cancer, something more natural. And so Kimberly is off. She moved to Canada. She changed her name. And it cuts to her there. She gets a knock on the door in the middle of the night. And it's like Trini's daughter. So she's telling the story of all this to Trini's daughter as far as like what happened at the very end. And essentially she's like, no, I won't ever do it again. She's like, really? Even if like, you know, Rita came back, you wouldn't do it? She's like, I can't. And all of a sudden, quote unquote, Trini's daughter turns into someone who has the staff of Rita, looks very evil as shit. And then ends up stealing the morpher from Kimberly and has Trinity and Kennedy, Kimberly's morpher. And that's when it cuts. So it's, I don't know if this is Rita too. I don't know if this is Rita's daughter. I don't know who this is, but she has Rita's staff. So there's new evil afoot. And I'm very curious to see where this goes. I'm liking it a lot. I was kind of curious. I mean, it gets kind of weird when you have celebrity guest writers. Mm-hmm. I know Miss Marvel did it and I read a little bit of that and that was actually pretty good. And this one's doing really well as well. I think it's very interesting to have someone who, especially Amy Jo Johnson, she's not as, she doesn't like being in the limelight as a Power Ranger as much as the other actors do. Cranston is always around. He loves kind of like showing that he was Blue Ranger, going to like, you know, conventions and stuff like that. Amy doesn't do it as often. Mm-hmm. She likes, you know, she has her own singing career and she does her own thing off to the side. And like, I remember they did like a reading of this book and I caught like the very end of it on Instagram and it was Billy being like, yeah, we should do a reading tour. We all wear our suits. I think they'd be a lot of fun. She's like, I don't have a suit. Like, you don't have a suit. And he's like, we can definitely get you a suit. She's like, I'm not wearing the suit. And he's like, come on. So we'll both wear the suit. He's like, no, you can wear it. He's like, I'm not doing it unless you do it. And they kind of got at each other a little bit. It was kind of weird. It's like, Kimberly really doesn't, Amy Jo Johnson really doesn't want to get back in that suit for some reason. I don't know why. She's coming to C2E2 though, so I might get her to sign one of these for me. So that'd be nice. I gave this one a 3 out of 5. I think it definitely improved off the first issue and just the storytelling alone of like the last battle that happened. Like, got to see it. I would have given this more points if the battle was actually cool, but again, this is one of the most comics to where I just don't think they're doing action the best. Mm-hmm. Or very well, especially it's the last battle. You got the other three or four Zords out there fighting just all these enemies, and you get like two or three shots, and that is all you get of that entire battle. I'm like, I would like to get like, you know, a couple more.
Should have been the whole issue.
I know, it should have been the majority of the issue. It was a majority issue, but a lot of it was cutting to Tommy and Kimberly inside the palace. So it's a little disappointing there, but we did get a little bit of it, and it's nice to see that.
Nice. What's the rating?
3 out of 5.
3 out of 5. Okay. All right. Immortal Thor number 8. It's written by Al Ewing. And there's the credits page. Art is by Abraham Roberson. Who's a guest artist, but really fucking good guest artist. Like,
yeah,
holy shit, this guy should have his own book for sure if he doesn't. But yeah, this is all about. So like this whole series, there's like the Utgard version of all the gods. And so this one is about Thor's mother, Gaia. And it's sort of just like a mythology story about her background and like how she created the earth, because she is very, she really just looks like Swamp Thing a little bit.
Like a Mother Earth kind of looking figure.
Yeah, I'm trying to find a good photo of her here. Her photo, geez. But yeah, she's kind of just not your average you know, Norse god or goddess, but then again, none of the Utgard versions are, so that's fine. But anyway, she essentially wants to kill a bunch of humans to save, you know, the sacrifice the few for the many or whatever. And Thor is not about that life, so he starts to fight her. And then the end of the last several issues has been about the Roxxon Corporation. And so the end of this one shows Thor going into Roxxon.
I've noticed that, like, looking through like what's coming here and there, Roxxon presents the next Thor book. Like, what's going on with Roxxon? What the hell is Roxxon? Like,
yeah,
it's a gas company, isn't it, in the actual real world?
Yeah. Well, that's what they want you to believe here.
Okay.
They're just, yeah, I mean, they're a corrupt oil company essentially in the Marvel universe, and the head of it is a guy named Dario Agger, and he is the Minotaur. So yeah, essentially Thor is catching wind of some shady stuff going on at Roxxon as per usual. So he goes in to talk to Dario, and that's kind of how it ends. They're like, "Oh, sorry, you don't have a meeting, Mr. Agger's not accepting." And he's like, "Yeah, bullshit." And, like, you know, causes a storm and walks through the door, and that's how it ends. So we'll see. I think it's going to be Roxxon saying, like, "We're sponsoring Thor and this is what he would do." I'm not for sure on that, but
I was thinking that, like, it was Roxxon's take on what's happening
as writing it. That could be too, because the final page or two of the last few issues has been Dario reading a Thor comic, and the Enchantress is there too. So obviously she can magic up some stuff. And so all of that is going to come to a head in the next issue.
Okay.
And, I'm looking forward to it. Should be pretty cool. But yeah, I like this issue. Each issue kind of reads just like a Norse mythology story, and as everybody knows, I am all about that. So
big stan. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's pretty cool. I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5.
Nice. Yeah, I remember you talking about that. I read the first couple of issues. I'm like, I got to a point, I'm like, I need to cut back on what I have in my subscriptions. So that unfortunately got the axe.
Yeah.
But I love the Neil Gaiman's Norse mythology, and you're pretty much saying it's like that, but Marvel doing that version of their own version of it. I'm like, okay, that's what I love about Thor. I think it's like, it is different, but it is pretty much Norse and Smollett mythology.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, since they're going so different with Thor stuff, it's one of those things where, like, if you're not super into Thor, you know, you could definitely trade weight it, but it's a really solid story, and I think it'll read well collected as well. So, all right. Let's go with Batman and Robin next. I have I grabbed the B cover by Derek Chu.
Very cool.
Yes. I love Derek Chu's art. So I was all about that. But anyway, it is written by Joshua Williamson with art by Simone DeMeo. And I could be wrong, but I think that starting this week, if you got a variant cover for DC, they have the A cover inside.
Yes. Same thing happened with my Sandman one. Yep. I love that option.
Yeah, I do too.
It's a nice hard outside cover too. Yeah, it's the hard stock. So that's nice. Can keep it safe. But if something were to happen to it, you do have the original cover right behind it. I'm like, right. Awesome. It's great.
I do like the quality of it. It makes me feel a little bit better about spending that extra dollar on it.
Yep, sure does.
But yeah, I personally love this issue.
Dude, hey, I'm loving Batman and Robin. Like, it's what I want to read when I read a Batman book. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't dabble in other Batman, but I remember this one started off. I'm like, okay, I like the art style of it for sure. It's definitely my style. And then it's just the father-son relationship here is just done perfectly. And not just your typical one, but like one where, you know, your son was trained as an assassin. And yeah, and you are also like a crime fighter. It's done incredibly well. Mm-hmm. This is a great issue. I don't know about you, but I ship Flatline and Damian so fucking hard. Yeah. Like, they're incredibly, like when they showed up and he's like, oh, you got your girlfriend coming in. He's like, did you tell him about our, you know, he's like, he told me enough. He's like, okay. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that was cute. And then they are kicking ass. And I'll tell you what, man. When I was mentioning how they don't do action very well in some comics, this one does it incredibly well.
Oh, yeah.
You got action going along the sides over here, coming down and around up into like the boom. It's like they're like little like pose right there at the very end, mm-hmm. which I thought was perfect. They do very well with it. I definitely have the variant for next issue with the Flatline cover on there because I think she's awesome.
Yes, she is. She, did you read Williamson's Robin run a couple of years ago? Mm-mm. Okay. So that's
Damian.
Yes, it was all about Damian. But Flatline was like a huge part of that too. That's where they met and this whole thing started. So it's nice to see that come back into play, especially because, you know, he's normally so broody and stuff, but whenever she busts his balls, mm-hmm. he isn't like that. And yeah. It's nice to see him be that way towards at least one character.
It's nice to see his shield come down.
Yes. And then, you know, we get some serious stuff where, you know, Dr. Langstrom is giving people these pills that aren't Man really Bat. Doing what he said they were going to do.
Man Bat cult.
Yeah. So, you know, and then it ends with Shush finding Batman and saying, hey, he's been lying to a lot of people, so maybe we should team up and take him down, which he doesn't really give the answer to. So we'll see how that plays out.
Yeah, that's the last page.
Next issue. But
I put on my notes here. Where is it at? I know I put it in here. Here it is. Are we trying not to spoil anything that happened in here? I don't know if we're holding back.
Oh, no. Go ahead.
Ra's al Ghul's ghost is talking to Flatline.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what I gathered? Where it's... Yeah, okay.
Like, yeah.
Because it's a quick little like one pager. Where it's like, why don't you tell him why you're really here? She's like, shut up. And he's like, Robin's like, what? And he's like, oh, nothing. I'm like, yeah. Okay. All right. Well, we're going to do this later, I guess. And then the whole Shush thing happening at the very end. I don't know about you. I'm not a big fan of Shush.
Yeah, I mean, she's just a rehash of Hush. I don't know. We need more about her. Here's the thing. Okay. Williamson is such a good writer that I know whenever he gives her like origin or whatever, we're going to be like, okay, we like this character.
Well, don't we have a little bit of it? Wasn't she like the one like who was like kind of training Robin and then got like chastised by his mom?
Yeah. Talia? Yeah. But I just,
okay.
I know that there's got to be more to it than that. So I'm just looking forward to the rest of that story. But yeah, very bizarre seeing Ra's al Ghul there. I am very curious what's happening. But yeah, I'm just loving it. This was arguably my favorite issue of the series so far.
It was almost my pick of the week. I gave it a 5 out of 5.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a 5 out of 5 as well. And I think it is my pick of the week.
Gotcha.
All right. And next up, we've got Green Lantern number 9.
Yes, sir.
It's written by Jeremy Adams with art by Zermanico. I also got a variant on this one. I got the Doc Shaner Jessica Cruz variant because I love Very me nice. Some Jessica Cruz. But wow, the A cover is gorgeous. And
yeah, A cover is real good. I was thinking about doing a variant. I'm like, but that cover just looks good.
Yeah, it's great. Which the A cover is by Steve Beach. But man, the interiors by Zermanico are so fucking
good. He
does
so good. He does such a good job, man. I'm so happy. There's been plenty of times where Green Lantern just kind of looks plain. But the way they design his face for this one, it's very unique. It's very different. I'm loving all about it. I'm all about it.
Lots of emotion, which is nice. Mm-hmm. And yeah, just strong colors. The thing that brings this one down slightly for me is that I have not really read much Green Lantern before this series.
Yep.
So his friend Tom, that's in a lot of this issue, no clue who that is.
Dude, so I've read a good amount, so I knew about the batteries being destroyed, everything like that. And then I have in my notes here, where is it? Hal finds a tunnel to the green where a hidden Green Lantern battery is revealed by his mechanic friend, Tom. who is the last new guardian. I'm like, fucking just Tom the mechanic is hanging out in the fucking green, left his wife and kids to go hang out in the green and wait for a Green Lantern to show up. Not that he would go and get a Green Lantern to bring to the green. He was just supposed to hang out there and wait.
Right.
Then he's like, oh, by the way, there's a lantern battery in the green. And I'm like, all right, okay.
Now, I assume that Tom is from the series New Guardians that happened in the New 52.
Yeah,
I didn't know. So yeah, anybody feel free to comment and clear me up on that. But that being said, even though I didn't know Tom was great. Like everything is just written well.
No, he's not a bad character. I just thought it was really funny that his friend Tom, yeah, the mechanic, was just hanging out in the green. Like, I was waiting for you, pal. We're here, yeah, all along.
And like, it's like, well, shit, what if he never showed up, man?
Right.
But yeah, anyway, so Hal, turns out he wasn't using like a proper ring. So Tom showed the new lantern battery, got table Hal came up with
the rings. That was so cool.
Yes, a table came up with the rings. He got Hal a proper ring. And then he was flying off to Oa.
Yep.
When he runs into a big old space battle, some lanterns who have been, I want to say spying, like, you know, they're acting like they're other lantern colors. So
they can switch.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of shenanigans happening. And right before these green lanterns who are red lanterns capture Hal, a big old green construct tank shows up. And who is in it?
So fucking cool.
But Joe from Far Sector. So
my favorite.
Yeah, your favorite Green Lantern? Nice.
Yeah, she reminds me a lot of Janelle Monáe. She's okay. Got the hair, she's got the look, and like the fact that like she has the Green Lantern like ring put like sweet fucking pointy shades on. Mm-hmm. She's rad, dude. She's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
Sojourner, I think that's what we call her.
Yeah, Sojourner, yeah. I really need to read Far Sector. I heard such good things about it, but yeah, everything she's been in has been cool, and I like this issue a lot. It did come with a backup called The Trial of Jessica Cruz. That was written by Sam Humphries with art by Yasmin Flores Montanez. I could not get into it.
I didn't like it.
As I'm previously not a big Cruz mentioned, person. Well, I am, and I still didn't like it.
So I have a question for you. Does she normally talk like that?
Here,
like,
no.
Very like she sounds like she's from California. Essentially, she's like putting like dude and stuff into like her speeches with like like, yeah, the high ups on Oa.
Yeah, the thing about Sam Humphries, I'm not a big fan of his writing.
Okay,
he wrote Green Lanterns during Rebirth, okay, which was the Jessica Cruz Simon Baz team up book.
Sure,
I didn't read that. I got into Jessica when she was a part of the Justice League Odyssey book, and she just reads completely different in this than she did then. So it's like, if you read Green Lanterns and enjoyed that book, then this is probably what you're looking for. but that's not me. So I didn't really dig it.
No, I'm a big fan.
So that's going to detract a little bit from the book as well. However, I don't want anyone to think that it's a bad issue, because it's a phenomenal issue. So I'm going to give it a 3.75, but that's just because I don't really know what's happening with some of the side characters. And also, sure, I hate paying another dollar for a backup when the backup sucks.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, I know. I was going to give it a 5 out of 5 until the backup happened. And I'm like, this is kind of soured it. And that and the whole, like, it's very convenient that there's this green power battery that's just hanging out in the green this entire time, God knows for how long. And I'm like, okay, well, that knocked it down a point for me. I did love it. I did like it. I'm glad we got another battery, and mm-hmm. now that we can toss those rings out to everybody else, and yeah. we can all continue on having proper lanterns. So I'm very excited to see where it goes from here. It's a good ending. And then Joe showing up at the end with the tank was just like chef's kiss. Too bad it didn't end on that. Ended on the side story.
Yeah, I know, right? I know. Yeah, hopefully Joe sticks around for a little bit and we get like a buddy cop couple of issues, because that would be fun.
Exactly. That would be great. I think your boy Gardner is going to be showing up in the next one.
Yeah, look that way. Thing. Yeah. But I think it might just be in the backup, so we'll see. If that's the case, I'm going to be a lot less excited. All right. So our final book is Wesley Dodd's The Sandman, number 6.
Ooh.
It's written by Robert Venditti with art by Riley Rossmo. And it is the final issue of this 6-issue mini.
Look at this beautiful, beautiful cover, man.
It's
look
how so good. That is.
I love it. So I've been like following like I'm a big variant guy. So like I'll look at my list for next week. I'm like, okay, which variants do I want? And I'll kind of replace them. I didn't usually do it very often for Sandman, but this one got me. Sebastian Fiumara. I think that's how you say his last name.
Yeah.
Great. Phenomenal cover. I love this. Again, none of those hardbacks to where you do get the actual insides there for the original cover. But yeah, it's love that cover. Love the issue.
Yeah. Issue was great, man. We, all of this stuff finally comes to a head, and it's the final showdown between Wesley and Wheeler Vanderlyle, who betrayed Wesley, and I'll just say the Dodds in general, because Wheeler knew Wesley's father from the war. I only have one knock on this issue.
Okay.
And that is, it kind of bummed me out that Wesley got his ass kicked the whole issue and then didn't beat the bad guy. Mm-hmm. He gets saved by Diane, which is fine. It's just kind of weird, because it's Wesley's story, and like he only gets these 6 issues, and then you don't have him stop the bad guy.
You have him get the shit kicked out of him at the very end. By his partner.
Yeah. Yeah. And Diane's great. Like Mystery Theater, you know, is one of my favorite books of all time. Diane's one of the best characters in that series. It's not really something that I would see her necessarily doing, but you know, that doesn't detract too much.
I had a question for you. Mm-hmm. In the middle of this fight, they're kind of going at it, and then I turned a page, and all of a sudden I'm getting this like flashback scene, like with like mm-hmm. I guess with it, like his father in it. Mm-hmm. I thought I skipped a page. Like I'm sitting here like trying to pry a page out in between the two, and like I don't see how they went from him kind of fighting the other guy, and then all of a sudden it just cuts to this weird trippy scene where his father is like yelling at him.
Yes.
And then just cuts right back to the fight.
So you can see on the previous page, as he's falling, some particles of his gas are there.
You kind of see it. Yeah. However, I do see the little green dots.
However, where does it come from? Because it doesn't show that.
He dropped all this stuff earlier, right? He didn't think, I want you to drop it all. I'm like, okay, I'll drop it all. Like, where did he trip on one of them? Or what happened? And like, I guess it just had him, he went like a really quick trip. Like, you know, he like tripped balls for like a whole 5 seconds and it came right back after he was done. Like, I'm like, this page absolutely makes no sense as to why it's here. It's nice little, the kind of thing that happened and it's very cool looking, but I'm like, I have this did not need to be here at all.
I agree. Like I guess nightmare sequence itself is very cool. Like it's Wesley's dad when he's at the war and like his skin's all, you know, kind of falling off from gas and like the bayonet and the gun is like bowing and, you know, getting all trippy. So like it looks super cool, but I agree that it is very out of place in the middle of this fight scene.
Yeah. There's also one other thing I want to mention. If you go to page 2, I'll kind of show it up here. I don't know how well it's going to show on here. But right across here in the glass, did you notice it?
Oh, no, I didn't until just now.
The glass actually spells out shattered. And I was sitting there, I'm like, I saw the R-E-D. I'm like, what does that say? So I'm kind of trying to pull it together. I'm like, holy shit, it just says shattered. I'm like, that's really cool. All these comics do like the whams and the flops or whatever they want to do. Like this, they say they put the words to the page on the action, the sound. But with that one, I'm like, that was a great idea. Perfect.
Yes. And we mentioned before, like Riley Rossmo goes so hard in this series. And that's just another perfect example of it. This has changed my mind on Riley's art a little bit because I've not been a big fan of his in the past, but he just does such a good job in this book. And I really hope that this gets another volume, man.
Hope it does something. I mean, in the worst case scenario, we can talk about the ending here in a second, but like, I really like the way he does Wesley. The guy looks a lot like the main character from the animated movie Atlantis.
He does Milo or whatever.
He's got the blonde hair. He's got the circle glasses. He's got like, you know, the pointy chin, everything like that. I'm like, it just screams Atlantis to me every time I see this guy.
Yeah. Another cool bit. So before the end, this is like 6 months after the fight. Wesley's house is getting put back together by the builders. Diane comes over and she's like, oh, Wesley, I brought my nephew, Sandy Hawkins. And for those that don't know, Sandy Hawkins becomes Sandman after Wesley during Jeff John's JSA run that I'm a big fan of. That's sort of like the next generation of heroes being the JSA, and Sandy is the Sandman. So that was just a fun little, that's for fans.
I knew it was somebody. So I'm like, okay, this is one of those things to people who know. I'm like, okay, let me look it up. Sandy Hawkins. I'm like, okay, he's one of the Sandmen.
Yeah. Yeah. Very good stuff. His butler, Wesley's butler comes up and he's like, Mr. Dodds, you know, someone's out back to see you. I think you'll want to take this one solo. And Wesley steps out back and is immediately met by the JSA. It looks so fucking cool.
What a perfect like last page. Like just the gray, just like boom, done, finale. Let's see what happens next. And I'm like, okay, well, hopefully we get a JSA book that I will be picking up.
that
will involve Wesley, and I'll be super stoked about it. Because like, they're doing a bunch of those guys, right? You got, you know, the Flash, Green Lantern here, and I know that they have new runs on those. I know I fell off the Green Lantern one, but I know you guys were following along with the Garrick Flash one. So
yeah,
it'd be cool to see kind of more of those kind of pop up, them just kind of doing more of that era.
I agree. And everyone is so fed up with the JSA book that Jeff Johns is writing right now because it's a 12 issue series that keeps getting delayed and delayed. So it would be nice if Robert Venditti was able to spin a JSA book out of this and then write it. So they've got, what I love the most about this is like all the original JSA members are here. They've got Dr. Fate, the Spectre, Jay Garrick, Hawkman, Hourman, Alan, and then the genie whose name I'm totally blanking on. I feel like such a fake dude? Fan. Yeah. Gosh, I'm terrible for forgetting his name.
You're fine. I don't even know who that is.
I know, but I should, because I'm always like, I love the JSA. So now I'm going to Google it. Johnny Thunderbolt. Yes, Thunderbolt. Johnny Thunderbolt. But anyway, they all land in the back and they're like, Wesley Dodds, we're admirers of your work. We'd like you to join a new group we're forming. It's called the Justice Society of America. So, yeah, just a really perfect ending. And right. Gosh, I'm just so sad that it's over, because it really is one of my favorite books that's out right now. So
short lived too with the whole six. I was kind of hoping they would have pulled like a what they do a Swamp Thing, to where it's like, okay, well, it's just doing so well, we're just going to double the amount of issues. I'm like, oh, I was kind of hoping they were going to do that.
Yeah.
Towards the end, but they did not.
Yeah, I agree. But yeah, I will give it a 4.75. It was almost perfect except for my gripe with the fight, and yeah, that's where I'm at with it.
I gave it a 5 out of 5. It's my pick of the week.
Nice, really good stuff. All right, man. So do you know the three books you're most excited for this upcoming week?
I do. So I want to give one honorable mention, because I'm not sure if I'm going to like it, but it's another Star Wars Solo kind of spinoff, which is a Jango Fett issue one. I don't know if you'll get it, but I do have the Derek Chu variant on my list. If you do get it, it looks very cool.
Nice.
And then the ones I'm super duper excited for is 1000%. This is probably my most excited comic for next week, is Star Wars Visions, the Takashi Okazaki.
Hell yeah.
Kind of like little small ones. Like they're doing like little small ones. They did one with Peach Momoko. I like that one. But this one, they're going to, it's like a prequel to the Ronin. So if you watch the Visions show in the first season, they did that black and white with a little bit of color. That was done by him as well. But it was that badass Ronin Jedi / Sith or whatever he was with his robot friend. And this is going to be like the kind of prelude to that. So I'm super excited about it. I'm a huge Afro Samurai fan. I love this man's art. I will get a cover, even if I don't read the series. I'll probably get a cover with him on it. He's kind of like my other version of Peach Momoko for me. But that one's going to be great. Super excited about that one. Blade number 9 comes out next week as well. Love me some Blade. Love what they're doing with this Blade. So I'm excited to see them do more with that. And then number 3... it would be John Constantine, but I don't know how I feel about that one. And reading the first half of that whole story, I don't know if I'm super excited about that. I'll still get it. It's got a really sweet Swamp Thing cover that I'm going to be getting with it. But I think I'll go with Star Wars Thrawn Alliances number 3. It's kind of a comic book rendition of the Thrawn books. And I never read those, but they've always been spoken very highly of. I love Thrawn in the Rebels series. And now Ahsoka. So I'm very, I really enjoy reading this telling of those stories from the original books, and they've given a lot of art to it. The last cover I got the last issue with that one, where it's Anakin and Thrawn, like in their like kind of Clone Wars / Rebellion Rebels era. And it was very cool. And I don't hate it. They're not doing it any injustice. So I've been enjoying it a lot. So I'm very excited to continue with that one.
Nice. I read, so Takashi Okazaki did a Visions book either last year or the year before that was also about the Ronin.
Mm-hmm.
And I read that and liked it a lot. So I'm thinking about picking that one up. However, there are so many books out this week.
A lot.
Yeah. I'll have to see if I get to it. But for me, I'm going to go with... God, there's just so many. Probably Vengeance of Moon Knight. I've been loving that one a lot.
That one I might be getting the trade for when you get it in, because I dropped off it because it's one of those things for like, okay, I need to drop some books. Mm-hmm. That was the whole end of that era of Moon Knight. I'm like, I'll drop off. And then you're like, oh, and Tigra is kind of heading up. I'm like, damn.
Yeah.
Damn. She's like my favorite. my favorite. I'm like, yeah. I'll just get the trade when it comes out. It's fine. I'll just wait and spend a little bit more. It's fine.
No, it's great. I mean, it really is a continuation. So if you like the other series, you'll like this one too.
Wait for the trade.
Gosh, I don't know. I don't even know. Probably Red Sonja. And then...
Are you not stoked for Superman? I know you guys have been into that one, but I kind of been falling off of that.
Oh, yeah, recently. Superman's out. Yeah, probably Superman. I love that book.
War Journal's pretty good, too. But I'm just saying.
Yeah, War Journal's very good. Like I said, man, there's just a lot. It's hard to choose. It's hard to choose. So, all right. Fantastic Four time, Preston. Mm-hmm. This one is catered just for you.
Oh, thanks.
Give me your... You know, we had the Acolyte announcement today. So give me your four favorite Star Wars things. Can be anything Star Wars related. Things? Game, book, movie, show.
So you got New Jedi Order, which is a book series that was supposed to take place after the original trilogy. Of course, is now their defunct canon. Something I really wish they would have kind of leaned more towards in those sequel movies. But, you know, Luke is married to Mara and they have a kid. The Solo kids, there's like three or four of them at this point. One of them crashes a planet in our moon into a planet with the Force, which is very cool. That whole series was what I really wanted out of that, because the main antagonist of that series was this weird, creepy, like bio species. They're called the Yuuzhan Vong. And they're essentially like, they'll cut off their arm and attach like a weird lobster thing to it. And they're hope it takes. If it doesn't take, then they're not blessed or whatever. But they're very like, they'll cut themselves, have scars for like as far as like accolades and medals kind of deal. They're very gross, very disgusting, and very scary. They have like a dog that could essentially like do this like screech that made everyone who uses force powers just like completely like incapacitated. And they're hunting Jedi. So those things would make them like to where, like a screeching sound. Like, of course, Jedi would like, oh God, it hurts my ears. And then they would hunt them down. They had like staffs that like turned into snakes. So like they'd be fighting the Jedi with their lightsabers, but then all of a sudden the staff would move around. And it was just very cool ideas all around. Chewie dies, very sad face, very sad little Preston boy. He died saving Anakin Solo. And there was this device that the Yuuzhan Vong put on this planet that brought a moon down to it, like a gravity well kind of deal. So they're rescuing people, they're getting everybody in the Falcon, and Anakin is laying down there on the ground. He can't get up there because he's got his leg hurt or whatever. Chewie jumps off of the Falcon, throws Anakin up there, and tells him to take off. And then the next handful of issues is just Han dealing with losing his best friend, essentially family member, and it's heartbreaking, man. Dude, I was hurt for like months after that. I'm like, oh, it's my favorite. It's my favorite. I would say video games, definitely KOTOR, Knights of the Old Republic. You gotta love those games. They're definitely one of my favorites. I love anything Mandalorian, not necessarily the show, but just the race of people itself. I always thought Boba Fett was the coolest. Jango Fett, also very cool. What do you call it? It's like when they were done dirty, just like Mace Windu. Mace Windu did him dirty, and then Mace Windu got done dirty, which is my fourth one. Mace Windu is one of the coolest Jedi to ever be. So I always love him. Him, the Clone Wars animated series by, I think his name is Garanovsky. Gendy. He did Primal, which is also very well done. But his take with Mace Windu when he's, You've definitely seen it, but the big, like, it's like an impaler ship, this giant tall like thing that's going across the whatever planet they're on. You're just pounding the ground real hard, and he's going to go to try to stop it. And as he's trying to stop it, he loses his lightsaber. And he's surrounded by this army of battle droids. He's like, okay. And he just starts punching the shit out of droids, and there are pieces flying everywhere. I'm like, this is the coolest thing in the world. He is the best, the absolute best. Yeah, that's my four. What about you? What are your favorite four things from Star Wars?
Well, real quick about that show, I always loved the silent episodes with the troopers just giving their hand signals and tearing shit up. It was so good.
Very cool.
It's hard for me not to go with a couple of video games. because I was so truly obsessed with Star Wars as a kid, and I would just play games over and over and over again. So I gotta go with Knights of the Old Republic. It's one of the best ones, if not the best one.
It's possibly the best one.
Yeah. And I know it's on and off again, but I hope that that remake actually happens, because as fun as the original is, it is a little bit dated, and it would be nice to have some updated mechanics and graphics. I'm going to do one other video game, one that Preston is very familiar with. It's Rogue Squadron 3 Rebel Strike.
Hold. That's your favorite of those?
I think it's the one I played the most, man. There's a lot of nostalgia. Let's say that.
So my favorite was the second one. And then
the second one's great.
Hey, if you guys watch Twitch stuff, go to twitch.tv/testingroompod, where your boy plays Star Wars games every Sunday morning, 9:30 Central Standard Time. I'm going through those Rogue Squadron games. I love 64. 64 was great. Played through that one. Still just as good as you remember it. Rogue Squadron 2, I'm having an issue with aiming. TIE fighters are really hard to see when everything's gray. But I end up getting through it. That last level really hit it into you. But the game itself, if you know all the levels, it's probably like 4 hours long. So, of course, they're going to make it a little bit kind of bullshit. They want to, once you get your money out of it. But, dude, I'm playing Strike now. And I remember that has the possibly worst platforming ever in Star Wars. Like those like on foot levels.
Yeah.
Are atrocious. Yeah. The aiming in them is horrible. There's no camera angles you can choose from. Like that is the absolute worst. And I played through a lot of those levels this past Sunday. It was hard, man.
Yeah.
I got through them. It's hard, but it's good. The flying in it's fantastic.
Well, that's what I like about it. I didn't play those games to run around as Luke. No, I played it because I love the ships in Star Wars, and that was my favorite way to experience all those different ships, or you know, a big old Cadillac. Because yes. If you put in the cheat code, you get that big old caddy.
Benz or something like that.
And the
part I love about that is when you go inside of it, it has like, you know, like a little like bobblehead and stuff like that. But like the radio is playing the cantina music while you're doing that. And I'm like, oh, so I went into like there, cause you have to do like your visor or whatever it is, the target computer. And I went to do that. I'm like, that's a cantina music playing right now. Like, that's awesome. That's great.
Yeah. I love it. I had it for GameCube, and my sister and I would just play that on repeat. So
yeah, and that one has co-op too, which I thought saw. I'm like, I don't even remember this being co-op. I'm like, that's awesome.
Yeah.
But we did all of Luke's episodes missions last time, so this coming Sunday I think it'll be out. But the next time we play it, I'll be doing the Wedge side of things, and I think that's most of the flying. So I think I'll have a lot better time with that half of the game.
Yeah. I love Wedge. He's one of my favorite characters.
Great.
Okay, my third one, I have to go with my favorite movie, which is Empire.
Thank you.
It's just...
Same with the trilogy.
It's the best fucking movie. It really is. Everything about it is absolute perfection. And, you know, what else can you say about Empire? It's amazing.
Who knows? Maybe it was because, you know, George Lucas didn't direct it. Maybe because it ends on a down note, like it's not like super positive at the very end, like that. Maybe it's because Boba Fett's in there. You know, who knows?
Oh yeah,
there's a lot of reasons why you
can. A lot of reasons.
It's one of my favorite for sure. As far as the original trilogy, it's definitely my favorite. I think as far as recently, I love Rogue One. Rogue One's one of my favorite. As far as like possibly my favorite Star Wars movie.
Yeah, Rogue One was fantastic, and it very nearly made this list. The end with Vader, it's just get goosebumps thinking about it. The only other thing that has that scene topped for my favorite scene in Star Wars is actually from Mando. The end of season one, when that Jedi's walking through kicking everyone's ass, and I'm like, who is it? Because we didn't get it spoiled. And then it's Luke. I lost my fucking mind.
There, and like, first off, they had Dark Troopers in it, which got me super excited and giddy. Because like, I'm the only one of my friends who I know, like, and there's a couple of friends out there who have played them, but like, I played the Dark Forces games like nonstop.
Yeah.
And the Dark Troopers I thought were the coolest, never brought into Star Wars after that. And then they drop them off here. I'm like, cool, great. Dark Troopers are canon. I love this. And then they get to the very end of that to where it's like they're beating down the door. I'm like, okay, how are we going to play this off? And you see that X-Wing come in. And I'm like, oh, who's this? I'm like, okay, like, which Jedi are they going to pull and say they survived? I'm like, okay, like, who are these people? So I think it was supposed to be, and you're going to be mad about this, but I think they told everybody on set that it was Kit Fisto.
Oh, really? Interesting.
I'm pretty sure that's who they said it was. They said that or Ki Adi Mundi, but you see him die in the movie, so that didn't happen. But yeah, I'm pretty sure they said it was Kit Fisto. And that's what they told everybody until the very end, where they actually had like the kind of lookalike Luke come in. But yeah, when he was fighting, I saw the green saber. I'm like, okay, green saber. And then like there was like one like backswing to where the hilt came in a little bit of the screen. I'm like, I know that lightsaber. That's Luke Skywalker. I'm excited for it. Let's see how they do this. And it came in, and it wasn't the worst looking, you know, facial stuff, but it did so much for me, man. I was so stoked.
Yeah,
jumping out of my seat, man.
So was I. Yeah, people really like to shit on the CG with how Luke looked, but dude, I thought it was great. I was there for it.
It was fine enough. And then guess what? Somebody on the YouTube did it better. And like, hey, look, I can do it better. And then Disney goes, bet, we're hiring you for the next season. And they did. And guess what? Luke looked fucking phenomenal in that second season.
Yeah. Which I love that. I love that for that person.
Yes, me too. Yeah.
And then I thought it would be fitting if I went with my favorite Star Wars comic for my fourth one. So okay. That is, there was a 4-issue miniseries during the Dark Horse years, which is, in my opinion, the best Star Wars comics ever were.
Okay.
And it's called the Stark Hyperspace War. And the main character of that is my favorite Jedi, Plo Koon. And it was right before the Clone Wars happened. It was a giant like space battle, and one that involved the Jedi's, even including Plo's master. You learn about him. He was a Wookiee Jedi master. He had like a wooden saber hilt. It was so fucking cool. But yeah, you just get to learn some background info about Plo Koon and like his, he can like communicate telepathically with people, which is super cool. I know Kit can as well, but, yeah. But, you know, Plo, I just saw him not only in episode 1, but leading up to that, I got a book. It was one of those books that had like every single item from episode 1 in it.
Like an encyclopedia Star Wars book.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I got to the page with Plo on it. And I'm like, this is the coolest looking guy I've ever seen in my life. He is my favorite character. So skip ahead to when I'm able to buy myself comic books and I see that this Stark Hyperspace War is all about Plo Koon. I had to get it. And I loved it. I made Casey borrow it at one point and he read it and said it was good. So it's not just my nostalgia saying that.
Fair enough. Yeah.
It's just a really fucking cool book. So.
Well, I definitely know what species you chose in Jedi Academy, the game.
Yes, you do. Went with Keldor for sure. Yeah. Alrighty. Well, that's the end of the episode. Before I go into the plugs, Preston, why don't you tell everybody where they can find you? I know you just did a bit, but
I'll give them the full lowdown. So wherever you get your podcast, look up The Testing Room. It's for 3 of your best video game consultants. We've never actually consulted on a video game, discuss gaming and all sorts of gaming stuff. We are back to the Video Game Book Club. Alex's thumb is, for the most part, all healed up. So we're back on that. We're diving back into the last Metro game. We went through the first two. Now we're going through Exodus. It's going to be a lot of fun. And yeah, go through that. And you sometimes we'll have a D&D episode where yours truly over here will help DM us. And we'll go through those. It's been a lot of fun. You can also find us on youtube.com/thetestingroom. That's where I'll put the video versions of this and any of the, I edit a little bit, but the streams that we do for the Star Wars games, I always edit them down. If I die a whole lot one level, I'll cut it down for you. But I'll put them over there onto YouTube and kind of do editing with them as well. And then, yeah, twitch.tv/testingroompod. You'll find me there most Sundays, 9:30 Central Standard Time, playing some Star Wars on Star Wars Sundays, sipping some coffee, hanging out with the homies. It's a fun time.
It is a fun time. I hit as many as I can, and those that I can't, I am always watching them on the YouTube. So
I appreciate it. Also, by the way, nice t-shirt, pal.
Oh, hey, nice, look at nice that. T-shirt.
Yeah.
We didn't even plan that. No, that I didn't. I saw it
earlier. I'm like, it's wearing the same color. I'm like, it's probably not the same shirt. And I saw you move a little bit. I'm like, oh, we're wearing the same shirt.
That's amazing. All right, folks. So if you would, head on over to facebook.com/twoworldspodcast and give our page a like. You can also follow us on Twitter at @2_worlds_PC and on Instagram at @2worldspod. You can email us at twoworldspodcast@gmail.com. And if you would, check out our YouTube, that is youtube.com/twoworldspodcast, and subscribe to the channel. But we would love to stay in chat, but God, I don't know how I'm going to end this one. We are going to go dive behind a private browser window. So we'll catch you next time. Bye, guys.
Bye.